This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast Show 358. Happy Thanksgiving!
I don't know why every single human being doesn't house hack. You should be. If you want to build financial freedom, either you should buy a property and be renting out rooms or units, or you should be on the other end of it. You should be renting out rooms or units from somebody that has it until you save up enough money that you could buy your own.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com. Your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everyone? This is Brandon, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. David Green. David, welcome to the solo show with you and I today.
Thank you. Welcome yourself to the solo show with you and I.
It's not really a solo show. What did we call it last time? A duet show?
Yeah, it's a duet.
We're doing a duet today.
We're like Sonny and Cher. We'll let the listeners decide who's who.
Yeah, okay, there we go. So today's show, we decided to do something a little bit different because like right now I'm constantly hearing, and David, I'm sure you are as well, a lot of people talking about how it's hard to invest in real estate right now. It's really difficult. But David and I, and I don't mean to make fun of people because it is sometimes hard, right? But in today's market, it's changing and different things work now than maybe worked a few years ago. And so today we want to dedicate an entire show so that you can learn like what should you be doing? What is working in today's market, and give you a bunch of different options, things that David and I are doing or things that we're you know, friends of ours are doing, that associates of ours, that clients of ours, whatever are doing, so that you can kind of get the most out of it. That sound about right, David? Good explanation on
that? That's exactly right. You know what I was thinking is there was a time when people paid a lot of money to learn how to buy real estate. And what they were told was, you go to the newspaper and you look for all the notice of defaults and you go not right. Like that was the hot strategy at a time. And now we think about like that is so archaic, but it wasn't really that long ago. And you kind of have to accept that real estate is always going to be changing. The environment changes, the culture changes, technology changes, how things are done change. And you got to kind of move with that in order to always be able to get the next deal.
Exactly. So today's show is about six different strategies. We're going to go through six strategies, kind of in depth, talking about each one, why it works, the stories of how it's worked, and kind of how you can use those to make money in today's market. Then we're going to shift to talking about some accelerants. We call them accelerants, things that you can pour fuel on the fire to make those strategies work. Now, before we do that, though, let's get to today's quick tip. I was waiting forever on you.
It took longer to say the quick tip than the quick tip's probably going to be.
I know. The quick tip today is very simple. If you are looking to get started investing in real estate, a really important thing to do is to start connecting with local people in your market. So I want to challenge you today is to find somebody in your market over the next 2 weeks that you can take out to coffee, lunch, get on a phone call with, go and sweep their garage floor. I don't care. Find something you can do in the next 2 weeks to connect with a real estate investor who's further along the journey from you than you are. And I don't care if you've done 100 deals, find somebody who's done 200, right? So somebody further along, find somebody in your market and at least connect with them, make a face-to-face connection in the next week. And of course, you can go to biggerpockets.com/events to see if there's any events in your area or engage in your local forum or just, you know, connect with people like somehow and go door to door until you find a landlord. All right. So that's today's quick tip.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Oh, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today.
And now, I think it's time to get into the show. Let's just jump in. Like I said, we're going to talk about six different strategies that you can use today in today's market to make money in real estate, things that are working today. And I want to start with probably the hottest buzzword, if you can even call it a word, the buzz acronym of the year. And a book just came out about that topic recently from David Green here. It's called BRRRR. David, what the heck is BRRRR investing for those who have not heard of that?
BRRRR is an acronym that you came up with and I got all the credit for, which I got to say, I'm not too unhappy about that. I'm not too mad about it. It stands for buy, rehab, rate, refinance, repeat. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I'll send you a check or a bill later for my royalties for that.
You deserve it. But you never would because you're a good guy. It's really funny. In fact, I'm actually kind of like possessive over it, even though I didn't make it. Whenever somebody else teaches on BRRRR, I'm like, who do you think you are?
Yeah, right? Well,
like,
it's your problem, man.
I own BRRRR, but I don't. In fact, people have been BRRRing before BRRRR was ever a name.
It's true.
It's basically just this principle of buying an asset, which is usually real estate because that's what we talk about, improving its value and then refinancing it when you're done to recover your capital to go reinvest. It's an extremely simple business principle that people have been using for years to make money, but you and I have figured out very specific ways that we can apply it to real estate, and it's helping a lot of people build a lot of wealth.
Yeah. And one of the questions people ask all the time is like, what will I go through that whole thing? So BRRRR is, let me say the acronym. So it's you buy a property. And I always say you're usually using short-term money of some kind, because here's the deal. You're probably buying a nasty property, right? Most BRRRs are somewhat nasty and banks do not want to lend on a nasty property. So you have a couple options. You can sit on the couch watching TV, or you can find another way to buy it. So that's what we do. We use a number of, like, what have you used for BRRRR to buy a property?
I've used my own cash. Okay. I've used private capital that I borrowed from other people. I've taken HELOCs on properties and used that cash to do it. And I've refinanced former BRRRs and taken that money to buy the next one.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's different strategies and there's a lot of them. And I've done a lease option once to BRRRR. I've done seller financing to BRRRR. And we'll talk about some of the stuff later in the later half of the show when we talk about the accelerants. But the idea is you use short-term money. And probably the easiest short-term money for a lot of people is probably hard money. It's because a lot of people don't have the private money connections yet. But hard money lenders, they're just people who basically finance flippers, but they also finance BRRRR investors. So anyway, you buy the property with short-term money. You then rehab it. You fix it up and make it really nice. And the beauty of that, when you're going to hold on to it, because these are rental properties, you're going to hold on to it. Now, like, your repairs and maintenance budget drops because everything's already been fixed, ideally. So you buy it, rehab it, then you rent it out. And what's great is you now have a remodeled property. It's a rehab property, which means you can rent it out for top dollar. Tenants love to live in remodeled properties. So you now rent it out. Now you've got this beautiful property that's really nice. You go and go to a local bank or any bank and say, hey, I got this really nice property. Now, do you want to lend on it? And the bank's like, heck yes, we do. We like nice, pretty properties. And so then they give you a loan. And that with that new loan, you pay off the short-term money. So now you have long-term money, you pay off the short-term money. And now that your short-term money is freed up, whatever that was, whether it was your own personal cash or a hard money lender, you can go and repeat the process. So buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. All right. So the question I want to know for you or from you, David, today is like, what do people like, if they want to start Burring now, what do they got to do? Like, what are some of the, like the, just the obvious, like first steps?
Well, the first thing you have to do is you start with the acronym and you work your way down. And in the book that I wrote, the Burr book that Bigger Pockets published, I kind of talk about if you master every stage of Burr, you've basically mastered every stage of real estate investing. Yeah. If you can master buying good deals, rehabbing them, understanding how to rent them out and analyzing that, understanding how to refinance them and how banks work, and then creating systems to repeat the process, you've become what I call a black belt investor. You're going to make big wealth. So it starts with buying good deals. Yeah, there you go. I like that. I was just telling Brandon before we recorded that with his long arms, he's like Dalsum from Street Fighter 2. If anybody ever played that game, send Brandon a yoga on Instagram. He's Beardy Brandon. And then get back to listening to this because this is a really good show. I don't want you to get too distracted. But you got to buy good deals. In fact, that is where all wealth comes from in real estate investing. There's a small argument to be made for making good deals and adding value through, you know, the rehab. And we're going to touch on that later in the show today. But buying good deals is really where it's at. And what I love about Burr is if you start with the end in mind and you know you have to refinance this when you're done and you want to get all your capital, you probably got to be all in for 75% of what it's going to appraise for, which means you got to buy a really good deal. You can't buy mediocre deals because then Burr's pointless. If you're refinancing at the end and you're not getting more of your money back than if you just bought it traditionally, then why? What's the point? Why go through all that? So it starts with finding good deals.
Yeah. That's exactly it. And learning how to find good deals, like I always say, is like the number one skill an investor can have is knowing how to like run the numbers and determine if it's a good deal and building that pipeline. We'll talk about that later again, the pipeline or the funnel. That's part of the accelerants that we'll talk about later. But here's an example, bro. I want to give an example and I'll let you do the same, David, just so if this is a little confusing to people. So I bought a property. I love telling this story. It's the Rosie story, right? So I bought this fourplex for my daughter, Rosie, the week she was born. I have a philosophy that if you buy every kid you have a property, just any property, like simple, basic, cheap, doesn't matter, property on a 15-year mortgage before they're like 5 years old, then by the time it's paid off, it's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, and now their college education's paid for. So that was the deal. So I bought this property super cheap because it was nasty. Like it was disgusting. It was a garbage hoarder in one of the units, and the other one was like a vagrant living there, and then like the other two were just destroyed. So we bought it for $40,000. Might have been 45. Yeah, 45. $45,000. We then put like 120 grand into it. So we bought it with a combination of private money and I got just a line of credit from the bank, just like an unsecured line of credit. So I bought it with that. So I had no money out of pocket. Then we bought it for 45. I put 120K into a rehab. That 120 also, that came from those two sources. So the hard money lender actually lent, or the private money lender lent me 100 grand. And then I borrowed the extra like 45, 50 I needed or whatever from the, or 60 anyway, from the bank line of credit, which made it so I had very little money in this deal. Then once it was all fixed up, all four units were rented out. It's a great property. We went to a local bank and we refinanced it. It appraised at like 225, if I remember right. We had 100 and whatever that is, 160 something into it. And so we were able to get a refinance so I could pay back the private lender. And then we now have a low, just a nice 30-year fixed mortgage. Well, it's actually a 30-year mortgage that I have set to pay it off. It'll be paid off entirely in 18 years from the time I got the loan. So when Rosie's, 18 years from the time we bought the property, it's set to pay it off. So Rosie will be 18 when that's paid off to nothing. And now that money was freed up. So guess what? My private lender, he lent me money on another deal. And in fact, I will talk about syndication later, but I did a syndication. He just put money into my syndication because I can use that same money and recycle it. So that was an example of a Burr deal. I'll throw one at you if you want to give an example.
Yeah. So the example I like to give is the very first one that I ever did. It worked out really good. I had this property in Arizona that wasn't performing very well. It had appreciated in value, but the rents weren't going up. So I sold that property. I took the money and I bought a property in Florida that was undervalued through a wholesaler. I fixed it up and it was worth so much more when it was appraised than it was when I bought it, that not only did I get all my capital back, I got another 15,000 back.
That's cool.
So I had put 65,000 into it from the Arizona house and then I got back $80,000. I then used that $80,000 to buy the next Burr deal, got all that 80 back and continued that process to buy about 10 more properties that year. Now, those 10 properties, you can imagine every time you buy a new property, I'm increasing by an average of $25,000 in equity on each one and about $300 in cash flow. So that's $3,000 in cash flow plus $250,000 to my net worth out of the same $65,000 that was one house. I turn one house into 10. And if you get a good deal every single time, it's that, you know, that analogy of the snowball that rolls down the hill and it grows bigger as it goes. That's what Burr can do for you. This is why this is such a powerful strategy. Now, it's not easy because you got to get a good deal. You can't just go pay market value for something. You can't go buy something that doesn't need work. Usually you're going to have to manage a rehab. You're going to earn that money. But man, if you look at like Rosie, you put all that money in, you got it all back out. So you got your capital to buy your next deal. She's got a house. You're going to enjoy the cash flow for the next 18 years and she's going to be set. She's going to have enough money to pay for her college, her car, probably a down payment for a house, and then some money's left over that she can start a retirement account, all because of one good decision that you made 18 years earlier.
Yeah, that's the power of real estate, right? You do stuff now and it affects you years and years later. But what I love about rental properties, especially Burr, is you can get cash flow now and wealth later. Like you can get both. You don't have to choose between them. And that's one thing I like about it. Now, David, why in today's market, which is super heated, we're at probably the top of the market or at least coming close to it. People are getting a little bit worried about it being toppy. Why is Burr a good strategy in this market?
Well, you never know what the market's going to do. And that's the first thing you have to understand is it could go out at any minute. Now, you and I, we talk, we're happy if the market goes down because we can go buy houses cheaper. We're actually kind of rooting for that in a lot of ways. Even though I'm a real estate agent, I'll make less money in my business. I'll make more wealth buying properties. But when you Burr, you get in and you get your money back out. Now, the only way that you get hurt if the market drops, because who really cares what your property's worth? As long as it's cash flowing, it doesn't matter to you. But the hurt is if you put all your capital into a deal and then you can't buy properties when they've gone down. The opportunity cost is really where you lose money when you buy too early. In fact, that's why most people say, I don't want to buy right now because what if the market goes down? Well, what they're realizing is if I put my 50 grand into the market now and it goes down, I'll really wish that I had it when it dropped. Well, Burr lets you have your cake and eat it too. You put that 50 grand in, you get it back out, the market drops. You're in the exact same position just with another cash flowing rental property. So it's really the wisest way that to be a wise steward of your money and make it work the best for you.
The way that I like to look at that is, you know, typically in a Burr, like you said earlier, you want to make sure that you have like 25, 30% equity in the property at the end. In other words, let's say you found a property that after it's all fixed up and beautiful, it was worth 100 grand, which means the bank is going to give you a loan. Like again, after everything's said and done, the property is worth 100 grand. The bank's going to probably give you a loan for $70,000 at the end during the refinance, which means you need to make sure that you're all in. All your money, what you bought it for, all the rehab, all the closing costs, everything. If you want to get all your money out, you need to make sure you're not over $70,000 total, which is totally doable. I mean, flippers do that all the time. House flippers do it. So can Burr investors. But here's what's cool is that let's say people are like, well, what if the market crashes in the middle of the Burr before you refinance? Well, good thing you only owe $70,000 on a property worth 100. Oh no, the market crashed 10%. Now it's worth 90. Okay, well, now you have a choice. You can refinance it and just have some of your cash left in it, or you can just sell it. And what if it drops 20%? Okay, just sell it. 30%, sell it. So like you have a long way to drop before you're really in trouble. And that's why I like it in this part of the market cycle.
You know, it's funny when people ask that question, what will you do if the market drops right in this tiny sliver of time when you could be doing your rehab?
Yeah, 6-month period, basically,
compared to the whole, you know, 30 years of real estate or whatever. What if you bought it traditionally and you paid $95,000 instead of $100,000 and you think you got a great deal because you paid less? How much money are you going to lose in that case?
Yeah.
So even though Burr isn't perfect, you could lose money. You are so much less likely to lose money than the traditional method that it's, to me, a no-brainer the way to go.
Yeah, there you go.
Two more things I want to say about Burr before we move on. One, like Brandon said, when you fixed it up and you've put money into the rehab before you refinance, you get that money back when you refinance. If you put money into a deal after you've already bought it, that money's gone. One of the benefits of fixing it up, buying a fixer-upper, is you reduce your capital expenditures, right? How much money I have to set aside to replace things because I did it all in the beginning and then got that money back. So it's going to cash flow better when I fix it all up in the beginning. The second thing is what we're describing is basically the same as what a house flipper does. But instead of selling it, we keep it. So you're going to pay closing costs when you refinance it, but you're going to avoid closing costs on selling a house. You're going to avoid real estate commissions, and you're going to avoid the capital gains tax because you kept the property. It ends up being much cheaper as long as the place will cash flow than flipping a house. And you would have to pay all those things for the same work if you were flipping instead of burring.
So what do you think people mess up on most? Last question before we move on. When they Burr, what do they screw up on?
Two things. One, they mess up on the appraised value, the ARV. That's definitely something that it's very, very tricky and hard to get down. I like to actually pay an appraiser to look at it or use real estate agents that are really good. Because if you think it's going to be worth 100 and it ends up being worth 78, that's going to affect how much of your capital you could get back. Two is the rehab. And that's the case for any kind of real estate. It's not unique to BRRRR. If you're buying it traditionally, if you're flipping a house, whatever you're doing, rehabs are tricky. They always go over a budget. They always go over the timeline you're supposed to have. But if you make sure that those two things go right, it's very difficult to lose money when doing a BRRRR.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I'm looking up right now. I'm scrolling through my tax return this year. Let's see. I wanted to see what my actual CapEx was on Rosie's property. Let's see. Got so many properties. All right. Let's see.
Let's all feel bad for Brandon because he has so many properties.
And I know, it's rough. We're sitting at $4,000 in all repairs and maintenance and CapEx. Everything for the whole year was like $4,100. Now I'm getting $2,800 a month times 12, roughly $34,000 a year. So last year, so we had about 11% in total CapEx and repairs and maintenance last year, which isn't bad at all. I usually estimate anywhere between 5 and 10% each for repairs and maintenance and CapEx. So typically I'm between 10 and 20% on the high end, 20 on the high end, 10 on the really low. So I was at 11% last year on all repairs and maintenance for that. I'm trying to see what other numbers I can pull out of here. My depreciation was $5,000. So I depreciated more than my entire repairs were, which is awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. So again, that's why I love real estate. I'm looking at this deal right now. So last year we made $9,000 on that property. So slightly less than the year before. The year before I actually made, it was like 12.2 or something like that. So $750 a month in actual, that's with depreciation. I can add it back in again. So it was actually 9 plus 44. So
you made more money.
So I actually made a little bit more money than last year.
13,400.
Just a little over $1,000 a month in cash flow on that one. Yeah. So again, the BRRRR is awesome because you can get cash flow now and you can get wealth later. So this property is getting paid down quickly. And I'm also getting cash flow to live in Hawaii. So, all right. Anyway, I thought that would be kind of fun to look at that like live here while we're recording. This is how did I do on that property last year? I never actually looked too in depth at that when I got my returns back. So moving on. Number two.
Next strategy. What do we got?
Let's talk about house hacking. We just released a book at Bigger Pockets called The House Hacking Strategy by Craig Curlop, because this is a really, really popular topic in today's market. Because a lot of people, I mean, it's crazy right now. Rents are crazy, but purchase prices are crazy. And as most people are probably aware of, your biggest expense in life is likely your housing expense. For most people, their biggest expense is their housing expense. I mean, for many people, it's like 50% of all the money they make goes to their housing. Imagine if you didn't have to pay that 50%. So house hacking is the idea where you buy a property and use it as both an investment property and a primary residence. The most common usage is you either buy a single family house and rent the bedrooms out. Or like the way I started, I mean, I started with that with my very first house. I rented the bedrooms. Secondly, then I bought a duplex and I rented out the other unit. And so in both those cases, I was able to live for free. And I know, David, you've done the same thing.
Yeah. So I'd say as a real estate agent in the Bay Area, probably 30% of my clients are coming to me because they want a house hack. That's how powerful this is. Yeah. And you summed it up perfectly. You are combining owning a property to live in with owning investment property. And one of the reasons this is so powerful is you can use the really low down payment loans to get into the market. And when houses are expensive and the market is hot, it's really hard. Stuff like this becomes that much more important. You have to be able to take advantage of 1%, 3%, 5% down loans to get in and reduce your living expenses and start to learn how to be a landlord and eventually get to the point you have cash flow and start building equity and start paying your loan down. You get all the benefits that come from owning rental property without needing as much capital to get started. And frankly, by taking a much smaller risk, because when it's your own property and you get to pick your tenants and you get to kind of learn the ropes at a slow pace and kind of playing in the shallow end of the pool, it's really good for your confidence. And you also have to put less money in. So you reduce your risk at every point. I gave a seminar on this in Sacramento actually two nights ago. And I was thinking when I was talking, I don't know why every single human being doesn't house hack. You should, if you want to build financial freedom, either you should buy a property and be renting out rooms or units, or you should be on the other end of it. You should be renting out rooms or units from somebody that has it until you save up enough money that you could buy your own.
Yeah, it's such a great strategy. In fact, like in Hawaii here, where it's very expensive in Hawaii, just like it is the Bay Area. Like this is a, like they don't call it house hacking here, but everybody in Hawaii pretty much is house hacking. Like the whole state is pretty much house hacking because like you can't afford it. Like the average person doesn't afford to live in Hawaii unless you have two or three units rented out at your property. So we call them Ohana units here. And like there's so many of them. Some are legal. Some are just like, you know, somebody takes a basement and turns it into a unit, or they take a bedroom and add up a little kitchenette. But everywhere you look in Hawaii, people are doing that. And so it works. I mean, I did it in Grays Harbor, Washington, where I bought a property for $80,000, a duplex, and I house hacked. And then I house hacked here where you buy houses for almost $2 million and you have to house hack to make it work. So again, it works and it's very, very powerful.
And there's so many ways you can do it. So I think on a future episode, we're going to interview a client that I had. They're actually house hacking an assisted living facility.
Really?
They bought a property. Yeah. And they're going to rent the rooms out to people who need like assisted living, like typically elderly people. They're probably going to make $5,000 to $6,000 per room on this 4 or 5 bedroom house. And they bought it with an FHA loan because they're going to be living in it.
Crazy. Right? That's cool.
So when all is said and done, they're going to be making $10,000 to $15,000 a month to run this business out of their house that they put 3.5% down to buy and got rid of the payment that they were paying when they were renting. That is so many wins stacked on top of each other. And if you just did that every year and you had, you know, for them, if they had 10 houses and they're making $10,000 to $15,000 a month or maybe more. Like that's massive wealth that you bought, putting 3% down on a bunch of houses because house hacking is that powerful.
Well, on that note, and not to deviate from the house hacking too much, but we don't have that as one of our six, but we probably could have made this a seven thing, is assisted living is a really interesting strategy. I'm definitely like intrigued by it. I'm not going to do it because I'm stuck on my mobile home park thing right now. But like, whenever I talk to people who are doing it, I'm like, it just makes so much sense right now. Baby boomers are getting older and older, and there's a whole lot of them coming up in retirement age. They're going to need a place to live. And if you can own these little assisted living for elderly or for developmentally disabled or whatever, I mean, it's a business. It's not necessarily straight real estate. Yep. You own a business, but it's very powerful. And I know some people are making a killing right now in this market doing that. So
yeah, probably more to come on that later, but for now, let's move on.
Moving on. All right, let's go to, so now number one was Burr. Number two was house hacking. The last thing I'll say about house hacking is one of the reasons it's so powerful too is the 3.5% down payment or 3% down payment. If you're going to live in a property, banks don't require the 20 or 30% down that you'd normally pay for rental. So anyway, just keep that in mind. If you're just starting out, got not a lot of cash, it's a great way to get in for almost nothing. If you're VA or if you're USDA, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, you can get 0% down as well, which is pretty cool. So, all right, moving on. Number three, what's working today in this market, house flipping. It's still working in today's market really, really well. In fact, I'm in the middle of a couple house flips right now that were projected to make like between 50 and 100 grand a piece on. Like it's awesome because people are paying crazy amounts for houses, but it doesn't mean that every flip goes well. So what are some things that people should know about flipping houses in today's market, especially in the Bay Area where you're seeing like a lot of probably flipping and competitive.
This year I've done two so far. I close on my third one either today or early next week. So I'm still flipping houses out here. In fact, there might not be a market where you can't flip houses if you really think about it, right? Because what stops you from being able to rent properties is either there's no one to rent it. I guess in that market, you couldn't flip houses if there's no one to buy it, but assuming there is, or the prices are too high for the rent to price ratio to make sense. But prices never get too high if you can just sell it for more than what you paid for it. So that's one of the reasons that I feel like house flipping needs to be a part of your repertoire. Even if that's not like your main strategy, it's not really going to build you as much wealth because you get taxed so heavy on it. It is a really good way to make money and build capital that you can then reinvest into real estate. And Brandon, I know you've got a couple examples. You're flipping houses out there in Hawaii. If you guys have a house to sell, you should definitely hit Brandon up because they're doing that. But everybody needs to have a decent understanding. It forces you to be a better rehabber. It forces you to get better at understanding values. And it forces you to look at a deal and say, what's the highest and best use? Is this a rental? Can I turn it into a multifamily? Can I sell it? Should I wholesale it? Should I buy it and live in it and do a live-in flip? But what we're doing with house flipping is I'm basically looking at properties that somebody wants to sell, usually quick. It's someone who doesn't want me to list it for them as a real estate agent, or it's a deal that a wholesaler found that my partner and I, and we go in on it. So the one I'm buying right now is actually a friend I had that was going into foreclosure. I bailed them out. I stopped the foreclosure process. I gave them a certain amount of time to pay me back. They couldn't pay me back. So instead, I'm taking title to the house. I'm giving them enough money to go and get an apartment complex to live in. They've been able to live like rent-free for 6 months now. So they've saved up enough money that they can start their life. And I'm taking over title to the house that I stopped. and we're going to fix it up and sell it so I can get my money back and make a profit. Now, that's, I mean, using that as a specific example, because that's not something David Green Realtor or David Green, hosts of Bigger Pockets podcast, can say I did and you can't do. Everybody out there can build relationships with people in their sphere of influence and say, hey, when you know someone who's in a jam financially or in a jam with real estate, think of me and give me a call. Yeah. And if you can solve that problem for them and you can set this up, like, you can do the exact same thing I did. There's nothing special about this one.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, house flipping is cool. And there's a few skills you need to be good at. And these are going to sound really familiar because we just talked about them. You need to be good at finding good deals. You need to understand the after repair value or the ARV. In other words, what's a property worth when it's all fixed up? And then you need to understand how to manage a rehab. So it's exactly talking about the BRRRR. It's really like the same, the exact same thing. If you can manage a rehab, if you can manage a deal pipeline, if you can manage analyzing a deal to make sure you're going to make some money on it, house flipping can be a really powerful strategy. Now, the downsides of that, of course, is we are at a toppy market. We are at a very competitive, hot market right now. So if you're going to flip houses in today's market, there's some things you got to be aware of, such as?
Well, first, what if you can't sell it? So in this house in particular, the house itself is going to be fixed up. And then it's got, what would I describe it? Kind of like a California room or a Florida room in the back that's humongous. I mean, like probably like 1200 square feet. And it has, it was used as like an entertaining room a long time ago. So it's got this bar built in where it's got the plumbing that you could put in a kitchen, and it has a bathroom attached to it. So we can easily take that thing and turn that into a 2 or 3 bedroom unit itself with a bathroom and a kitchen. That's and cool. Rent that out in addition to the main house that we fixed up. And we have a rental property if something goes wrong and we can't sell it. That's one of the biggest things, is like having multiple exits.
Exit really strategies. Good. Yeah.
Yep. The other thing, if you don't have exit strategies or multiple ones, is just make sure there's so much meat on the bone that even if the market turns around, you can still sell it and get your money back. That's a real, I mean, this deal has a ton of equity in it, and that's why I was comfortable doing it. When I saw what this person owed on their mortgage and that they were behind, the reason I was willing to get them caught up was because I knew there's so much equity in this property. It would be a shame if the bank was going to make a grip. They were going to make a ton of money if it went to foreclosure. Better that one of us would do it and she would get a little bit of money out of the deal than nothing.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, the meat on the bone thing is so important. I had a buddy reach out a couple of days ago and he said, hey, I'm looking for a partner to do this flip with me, like a financial partner. Do you know anybody to be interested? Are you interested in working on it with me? So I looked at it. It was my old town. And like the purchase price seemed great. It was $30,000. I was like, well, that's a pretty good deal. You know, it's a low price for a property, 30 grand. And then I looked at the numbers. It was 30 grand for that. It was 70 for the rehab. So it's going to be $100,000 total into it. What was the ARV? What was it worth when it's fixed up? It was 120 or 118. And with realtor costs and all that, like his projected profit was $8,000. And I said, like that, now that was with zero financing. So he wanted a partner to come in and finance the entire thing and then split the profit. And I'm like, you do realize you're talking about somebody putting in $100,000 to make $4,000 in profit, like in a toppy market.
Assuming it all goes perfectly well,
you're talking about making like $4,000.
4% on best case scenario.
Exactly.
That is not meat on the bone. That is the chicken wing that that somebody has already eaten every single piece. And you're hoping that there's a little tiny piece of tendon that got left on there.
Yeah. And so that's like, my response was like, there's just not enough meat on the bone. I would not touch a flip today, like in that market, if I wasn't making, you know, in that market, 25, 30 grand in Hawaii. Like, I don't want to touch a flip unless it's 100. Like, our projection is $100,000. Cause if the market drops and I'm paying 700 grand for a condo, like I got to make sure that if the market drops significantly, I'm not going to be screwed and be 100 grand under. Yeah. So meat on the bone, very, very important. And yeah, like the one we thought we were going to make 100 grand profit, looks like we might make 60. Boo-hoo, you know, like because the comps aren't right where they were. So I'm still doing okay. And the, you know, comps have softened a little bit in that area. Okay. That's why we project 100K, because if something goes wrong, we're going to make 60K, you know, we'll survive. So,
You were going to say multiple exit strategies, right?
I was. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's funny that when you're first getting started, you tend to look at the best case scenario and try to find a way to make it work. And when you've done this for long enough, what you just assume like all hell is going to break loose on every deal. And that extra meat on the bone is not actually going to be there. Chunks of that meat are getting taken off on every deal.
Yeah. There are a lot of investors out there who come in on budget and on time with every flip. And I'm always very jealous of them. Guys like, you know, Jay Scott, it's like, yeah, I'm like $3,000 under budget. No, I have never, I don't think in my entire life, I don't think I've ever been under budget on any flip I've ever done. Every time I'm over, even if it's just a few hundred bucks or a few thousand, I'm always always over budget a little bit. So I just learned to expect that. And I just like chunk in an extra 10 or 20% at the end, knowing that I'm going to be over budget. I'm just not, I don't flip enough to have my systems that perfect so to never go
that's
over.
That's what it comes down to. That's why Jay does it so well. Is he does this so much. He has the same crews. He has not just he himself, but all the people on his team do this all the time. Yes. They already paid the price going over budget many times in the past. So now they're good. If that's not you, then just expect you're going to pay a lot more than you think and make sure that there's got to be a lot of meat on the bone.
Yeah. So for flipping houses, let's talk real quick about financing. So the most popular way to finance a flip is typically what we call the hard money. So hard money are these companies out there that exist to help you fund your deal. And for example, the deal that we're closing that we should make 60K on, you remember Corey Nemoto we had on the podcast?
Love Corey.
Yeah, Corey's awesome, right? So Corey started a hard money company in Oahu. So like I called up Corey and we're like, hey, can you fund this deal? So Corey's funding the deal through, I think it's called Keiko Capital, which I think is K-E-C-O Capital. They're on Instagram, Keiko Capital, K-E-C-O Capital on Instagram, or you can look at the show notes page. Yeah, anyway, like they're funding this deal. They're funding, I think, what was it? 90% maybe of the purchase price and like most of the rehab. And so like it was very little money out of pocket rates for hard money used to be like, 18, 17% interest rate. Now they've come down to like, I've even seen them low, like high single digits, but usually low double digits, high single digits for interest. And, you know, maybe a couple percent fee, we call them points. So as long as you work those into your numbers, hard money can be a fantastic way to get started flipping houses.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you this, I don't know that hard money rates will ever be as low as what they are right now. Hard money almost barely is hard money because we're calling it hard money, but this is like what private equity or private capital was like for most of the time that I've been investing.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, I totally agree. And it's because of like supply and demand. There's a lot of hard money lenders out there competing for your business. In fact, if you guys want to look for a hard money lender in your area, we have a directory. So we don't like pre-screen them, but go to biggerpockets.com/hardmoneylenders. And we just have the web's largest directory of hard money lenders. You can just jump in there and check them out. So again, hard money can be a great way to flip houses. But like you said, I want to revisit one thing as we transition to the next segment or the next strategy. You mentioned having multiple exit strategies. So here's what I'm doing because I don't like flipping houses in a toppy market. I don't want to do all that work and then make no profit. So everything I do has to have a couple strategies. So that I'm flipping two condos right now. Both of them are zoned for what we're going to talk about in a second, which is vacation rentals. So if something goes wrong or the market starts to drop, I can turn those into vacation rentals and then just rent them out. So that's kind of my exit strategy on those. Other times it would be, hey, I can just fire sale it and get it sold as quick as possible. Other times I'm just going to do a traditional rental. Another example is I almost flipped a house. It was like a $2 million house. It was a big house and needed $500,000 worth of work. So my strategy for that, because it was such a big rehab, I was just going to partner with someone. Like I was going to find someone like somebody wealthy who could bring all of the money and all of the rehab costs. And I was going to manage all of the work. And then we were just going to split it 50-50, the profit at the end. Now, the beauty of that, and I might have put in something just to make the person feel comfortable. But the beauty of that is if the market really something went wrong, this person who's a wealthy individual, well, worst case, we just have to hold on to the property, rent it for a few years, and we'll sell it later. So like, you can't lose money if you just hold on long enough, especially in that kind of a situation, because there wouldn't be a mortgage. It would just be somebody's capital. So anyway, again, exit strategy is very important. But like I said, my exit strategy is vacation rental. So let's talk about that. Do you have any vacation rentals, David?
No, I don't have any. And that's just because they take more time to manage than regular ones do. But I'm not against the strategy at all.
Yeah, we should talk about Jay Martin real quick. So Jay Martin is a buddy that both of us know. Jay does a lot. Like he was in the Bay Area, ended up buying a bunch of vacation rentals. He bought some and then he does what we call Airbnb arbitrage. Anyway, ended up just becoming like, now he just travels the world, like just like traveling around. Like he doesn't even have a home. He's literally homeless. And he has a team of virtual assistants managing the vacation rentals. So it's kind of a cool story and it's a cool strategy for being able to pull something like this off. And again, a lot of people are doing this right now because it's a very popular topic. So vacation rentals, do they only work in vacation areas, David?
You know, probably, or maybe not vacation areas, right? It doesn't have to be a vacation, but it does have to be somewhere that people are going to travel to.
Yes.
So a lot of people like Jay, they're doing corporate housing. So they're buying properties that businesses are going to send somebody to. It could be a traveling nurse, a traveling anesthesiologist, a doctor, anybody who's going to be moving around that doesn't want to necessarily pay hotel rates is, I would say, what your target market
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe the better term is short-term rentals because short-term rental could be corporate housing, could be vacation rentals, could be whatever. Yeah. I did it for a little while in Grays Harbor County, like Washington, which is definitely not a real touristy area. And it worked for a while. I mean, it was more headache than I wanted. But yeah, it does have to be somewhere that people at least want to travel. But yeah, again, that could be weddings. Like, I mean, I have people that do it in Nashville, people that do it in, I mean, pretty much any city it would probably work in, because people travel to cities all the time for things. If there are hotels, you can probably do a vacation rental. That's kind of exactly the, or a short-term rental. That said, like I said, I had one for a while and I didn't like it because it's hard to have one. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I'll talk about that. Why is it hard to only have one?
Because like your systems just aren't there. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's like, kind of like flipping a house a year. It's actually easier to probably flip 20 houses a year than it is to flip one house a year. Because like when you flip 20 houses a year, you've got all these systems and people and processes in place. When you have one vacation rental, like you don't have time to figure out all the automation and all the systems and the virtual assistants and whatever you need to do to run your business, because you just have one. So,
exactly right. Yeah. So vacation rentals are going to increase your bottom end, how much money you're going to be making.
Yep.
But, or maybe I should say your top end, but they're going to also increase the amount of work that you do. And when that workload gets to a certain point, you're going to want to leverage it off, and you need enough income coming in to justify bringing somebody else in, which usually means you need more than one property to have somebody that manages it for you. So you got to find that sweet spot where, you know, if I have eight of these things, I can pay an assistant to manage it for me. And now I'm making passive income theoretically, but numbers 1 through 7, you're going to be doing some work on those as you're building it up. So that's why this isn't a good idea to just do like as a one-off most of the time. Now, if you like doing the work, then that's fine, right? If that's something that you enjoy doing, but that is not Brandon and I. We do not like doing the work. That's probably why we don't do a lot of these short-term rentals. Yeah. The other thing I want to caution people on is you don't know if the laws are going to change. You don't know if the market's going to shift. So when you do this, make sure that you can afford that property if the increased revenue you make from short-term rentals goes down. Now, you may be able to rent it out traditionally, and maybe you don't cash flow, but you have enough money coming in that you're okay. You can survive that. But if you know that's not you, you don't have a lot of money, you don't have additional income, maybe you don't want to buy it if it won't support itself with the traditional rental.
Yeah. Method. Yeah, that's a great point. And kind of the exit strategy thing, having multiple exit strategies if you needed it. Yeah, that's my biggest worry about like a lot of people today, and with the vacation rental thing, like they're buying properties. And the only way that makes sense is if the laws don't change and if vacation rentals are always allowed and that the economy doesn't change. But like with every industry, like things are hot for a while and then corporate gets into it and all like it levels out. The playing field always levels out over enough time. And so I think that'll eventually happen to, I mean, we've already seen it happening, right? Rates have dropped a little bit, I think, on vacation rentals because there's just so much of it. We're back. I feel like back in the day, you couldn't get a short-term rental. It was like $100, $150 a night in some areas. Now you can get like $30 a night. You can rent a house in some areas. Yeah. It's just supply and demand. The more people get into it. So again, make sure that it works outside of that. But here's a way around that I think is a phenomenal strategy. And I've not personally done it at all, but I know some friends of mine, including like Jay Martin, have done it. And that's that Airbnb arbitrage. There's a lot of names for it, but that's what I call it. The idea is this. Let's just say, David, let's say I end up owning this condo that I'm flipping. Let's say the market maybe drops, or I just decide I'm going to rent it out traditionally. I could only get for this condo downtown Kihei, Maui, I could probably get $2,000 a month, maybe $2,500 as a traditional rental. I could basically break even if I own that as a rental property. But let's say I wanted to. I just said, hey, that's okay with me. So let's say $2,000 a month is what I'm getting from my rental. It's just for easy math. David here comes to me and says, hey, Brandon, you know, like I am an Airbnb or vacation rental specialist. What I do is I rent properties from landlords like you, and then I turn around and re-rent them out to on Airbnb, and I do all the work. And so you don't have to hassle all the hassle. And in fact, you're only making $2,000 a month. I'll actually rent it from you for $2,500 a month. So not only are you making more money, but you've got somebody who's a professional taking care of your property. It's getting cleaned all the time. If anything goes wrong, I'll take care of it. You have no risk whatsoever, and you're making more money. Now, David then is paying $2,500 to me, but he goes and does all the work of renting it out on Airbnb or HomeAway or any of those sites. And now David's renting it out, let's say, for $7,000 a month. So David gets to keep the difference. That's why we call it arbitrage. It's Airbnb arbitrage. Now, the danger is, of course, you don't want to lie to your landlord. I never recommend that, saying, oh, I'm going to rent it like traditionally. And then you go and sneak around the landlord's back and go and put it on Airbnb. I don't advise that ever, because the landlord will find out and then you'll get in trouble and you get, you know, evicted from your own rental. And you got to make sure that it's zoned appropriately. Like in Hawaii, there's very little that's zoned vacation rental because they don't like vacation rentals. But if you go and target those condo areas or those house areas that are zoned, Airbnb arbitrage is a fantastic model right now.
Yeah, that's a really good way. And if it changes and you can't do that, well, what other options do you have? Okay, I'll manage it myself. Well, that doesn't work. Okay, I'll rent it out traditionally. Yeah. And what if you get 5 or 6 years of making good money before the laws change and you can't do it? Well, maybe you made 30, 40, 50 grand, which isn't anything to shake a stick at.
Yeah.
And by then, rents have gone up so much that you are cash flowing with the traditional method.
Yep.
So,
yeah. And you know, worst case, you don't own the property. You can just end the lease. All right. Well, thanks. You know, thanks, landlord. It was great. And you can
exactly
be done.
Right.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't work out perfectly, that's okay as long as you have options. And that's really the theme that Brandon and I are getting at here is the more options you have, the less likely you are to lose money.
Yeah, there we go. So short-term rentals or vacation rentals, great strategy. Let's go on to number 5, wholesaling.
Wholesaling.
David, what is wholesaling?
Wholesaling, to sum up very distinctly, would be putting a property under contract and selling that contract to somebody else, not selling the title to the property. So you have a house that's worth 150 grand. You agree to sell it to me for 100 grand. I go to someone else and I say, you can buy it for 110. I never own the property. I never took title. I don't pay the closing costs. I sell the right to buy it for 100 grand to you. And you give me $10,000 at closing to compensate me for that. It's a way that you can get in and out of deals without a lot of exposure, without a lot of capital, and without as much risk as far as like you're still gonna have some legal risk if you do it wrong. That's one thing to keep in mind, but there's less risk from the business sense of wholesaling. And there's a lot of people doing really, really good. If you have a skill set for negotiating and you're really good at networking and talking to people and finding deals, but you don't want to deal with the rehab, you don't want to deal with finding money to buy a house, you don't want to be a landlord, you can make a really profitable business doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. Wholesaling is interesting. It is very risky in that if you do it wrong, you could be violating a law. Like, so the law that you might hear people say wholesaling is illegal, like in some states, they're a lot more strict than others. And I never advise ever doing anything that's illegal. So if it might be illegal, don't do it or do it the right way. So here's what we're talking about. It's practicing real estate without a license. That's the key. So if you were to look at I looked it up in Washington once, like what does it mean to practice real estate without a license? And it was like, it gave a list of like a bunch of things, but it's basically means you're doing like negotiating, you're marketing, you're basically doing all the work that a real estate agent is going to do. Except for you have no oversight, you have no principles, you just go do it. And therefore we have laws against that in the US. So you have a couple options. One, again, we're not lawyers or, attorneys or CPAs. So make sure you guys get proper legal advice on how to do this in your area. But a couple options that I've seen that people do is one, they get their real estate license. Now you're not practicing real estate without a license. Now there are questions there, with fiduciary responsibility and stuff, but that's a separate issue that you can deal with at that point. So anyway, get your license or just buy the property and then go and resell the property again. So what we call those double closing or whatever, because then you're not marketing a property you don't own. You literally just buy a property, which you don't need a license to buy a property. And then you're selling your property. You don't need a license to sell your property. So as long as
you set it all up beforehand. So you set up that the person is going to buy it from you for whatever price they have. You close on it, you take title, then you sell title to the property instead of the contract. Very good point.
Yeah. So there's ways to do it. Now, there are some lawyers who would say, well, that's violating the intent of the law, not the letter of the law. Therefore, you might get in trouble there too. And if don't do that way. Find a way to do it if you want to do it. It's like that Jim Rohn quote. If you really want to do something, you'll find a way. If not, you'll find an excuse. So talk to a lawyer, figure it out. What's going to make it work in your market?
Let me jump in with that. Please. For those that might hear Brandon say that and say, oh, that sounds really good. The thing is, most deals that you get as a wholesaler come from a seller who's in distress. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like picture a person falling off a cliff and you're reaching your hand down to say, hey, I will catch you. For the person who's worried that they're going to completely fall off a cliff, go into bankruptcy, lose a property, they don't care if you're offering a hand, if you're offering a strap, if you're saying, well, I'll give you 3 fingers, but not all 5. Whatever you got to do legally is still better for them than what's coming. So if you understand the law, you can set it up to where it's not illegal, not immoral, and still a win-win for both you and the person. Don't think negatively like, well, this is too hard. If I can't do it this way, then I can't do it at all. Because most sellers won't care. They just don't want to fall.
Yep. Yeah, it's exactly it. So find a way to do it. If you really want to be a wholesaler, find a way to do it right. Get the right consultant, like the right attorney, talk about it. And again, it works today because flipping works. And most likely you're going to be selling your property to either a burr investor or a flipper. Those are the two people that typically most wholesalers are selling to, is either a burr investor or a flipper. So go out there and again, find a good deal. All of these things really come down. You have to find a good deal. You have to be able to identify good deals. And so if you need help with that, David and I both are teaching webinars. I've been doing it for 4 years now. David's just starting on Bigger Pockets, where we help people learn how to run the numbers on deals. You can sign up anytime, biggerpockets.com/ webinar. So wholesaling, moving on. Number six, should we talk about it?
Yes.
All right.
Number six.
The last thing that's working in today's market, and it's getting more and more competitive, but that is syndication, meaning larger invest. Like typically syndication means you're buying like an apartment complex, or in my case, I'm syndicating mobile home parks. So syndication is basically where you raise money from what we call limited partners. So people who have money, but want to just be passive. So you can put money into a syndication, and then the syndication, we call them general partners. The general partners are the ones that are doing all the work. So if, for example, in my syndications or my fund, it's very similar, but like I am the general partner along with my partners, guys like Ryan Murdoch and Brian Murray and Mike Williams and Walker Meadows. Like we're the GP, the general partners. We do all of the work. The limited partners do nothing, but they write a check or wire money in. And so the beauty of syndication is you can take down some pretty large investment properties, like huge apartment complexes or whatever. You can do that. I mean, you can even syndicate a single family house if you wanted to, or a flip. It's just a little more expensive. So people don't usually do it, but it's possible. But the idea is you can take down big properties for really no money out of pocket. And it's working in today's market because rents are going up. Because, people like rents are going up. There are still a lot of dumpy properties out there that need to be fixed up. So what a typical syndicator will do is buy, let's say, an apartment complex that is $300 under rent, like under market rent. They'll buy it using a syndication, raise rents, manage better, cut expenses, raise income, remodel the units, whatever they got to do. And then everyone gets a good return. And then maybe 3, 4, 5, 10 years later, they pay everyone back. They sell the property. It's almost like a flip, but it's over like a 5 to 10 year period. Is that a good way of explaining syndication?
Yeah, that's really good. And the reason that it works is it allows, because the deal is so big, you can chop it up into really small pieces that allow mm-hmm. everyone to specialize in what they are good at. So imagine like a sniper in the army, and he's really good at taking out the enemy. But you don't want your sniper to be running around looking for bullets and finding the gun and finding the right perch and making sure that they have water and food to eat. You really want them to just be focused on what they do, which is being a sniper. That yeah. would be like the general partner. They find the deal, they take the deal down, and they have people in place that can manage it and make it worth more money. That's exactly what you want out of the person who's the general partner. Now, the limited partners are people who come and supply all the things a general partner would need. Hey, I got a bunch of bullets for you. Don't worry. You don't have to get your own. You can stay looking down the scope and I'll provide the bullets. Hey, I'm going to make some shade for you here so you don't get too hot. Hey, here's some food for when you're hungry and you need to eat. It allows everybody to focus on the part they're really good at. And when you get to the point that you've got a lot of money and you don't want to have to learn something new, it's really nice to just provide the bullets, let somebody else go make money with it, and yeah. then come back and give you your portion.
Yeah. So anyway, so syndication, super powerful. If you can make it work, it's a complex, more complicated process. Again, I just did my very first one. I just closed my first fund. We just started a second one. And then it gets more complicated because like, you got to learn, like, can you work with accredited investors or not accredited investors? And so I had to like learn and navigate that. And so it's been a huge learning process, but it's a phenomenal tool in today's market to be able to, I guess, grow wealth very rapidly by taking a small bit of a much larger deal. Anything else you want to add on the?
Yeah. Why don't we talk a little bit about things people should be aware of when investing in syndication so they don't lose money?
Good call. Yeah. So the most important thing I think is the team. Like it really like, do you, cause here's the deal. Here's what I always say. Like I've had people come to me and they're like, Brandon, can you look like friends of mine? You know, hey, I'm looking at doing this syndication. Can you look at these numbers and tell me if you think this is a good deal or not? And what I always say is, like, are you going to go knock on Miss Betty Johnson's door at 506 17C, you know, apartment 9? Are you going to go knock on her door and be like, hey, Betty, it says here in the documents that your rent is $875. Is that true? Of course you're not going to do that. In other words, you're completely trusting the person to have not lied about what the rent is. You have no idea. And so it's like the engine analogy you use about, you open up your car engine, you're like, oh, it looks like I got a problem in here. Just take it to a car, like a car, because we don't know what we're doing when we fix a car. It's the same thing.
Like, no, you don't. But yeah. The mechanic is what matters, right?
Yes, the mechanic.
The mechanic could lie to me. He can say, oh, you got, and that's our biggest fear when you don't understand cars. So when you find a trustworthy mechanic, that's where you like grab a hold of that person and never let go. Yep. That's who your operator is. And that's, I think you said that perfectly, Brandon.
Thank you.
This isn't just you and I, this is every successful, wealthy person we know.
Yeah.
The higher that you get into people that are successful, the more that they start to say, I trust the operator more than I trust the deal.
Yeah.
I don't look as much at the numbers. I look at them briefly, but like you said, they could fudge numbers. Anybody can make numbers show whatever they want them to say. I trust the integrity of the person doing the deal. So yes, Brandon, you're 100% right. That's the first thing people should look at.
Yeah. So look at the team, look at the people in there. Do they have the balance sheet? Do they have the experience? Do they kind of know what they're doing? Like if this is, I'm not saying you shouldn't necessarily work with someone's first syndication, but here's an example. So I just started my very first syndication. Like, yes, I'm a trustworthy guy. I like to think I'm here on a podcast, but let's be honest. Like you guys listen to me on a podcast every week. Does that mean you should trust me? Probably not. Just because I talk on a podcast. However, can you trust my actions? Can you look at previous deals? Probably. But even so, I brought in a guy named Brian Murray to be like head our asset manager. Brian Murray wrote like a book, Crushing It in Commercial Real Estate and Apartments or something like that. I probably just butchered the name. Anyway, Brian Murray like owns like a ton of real estate, like hundreds, like thousands of rental units already. He's already done syndications. So I brought him in because now I attach my credibility to Brian. And so it makes me now much more credible. So again, like it doesn't mean that if you're brand new, you can't go and do a syndication, but you may have to attach yourself to somebody with more credibility or with more experience so that you can borrow their experience and credibility as well. So again, when you're looking into a thing, look for that.
Exactly right. So this is like Brandon said, okay, you guys can trust me. I'm trustworthy. I'm opening a mechanic shop. We're not going to do you wrong. And you say, well, that may be true, but you've never actually worked on a car. So I may trust you, but I don't know if I trust your experience, right? Like, that's okay. I got this guy. He used to work for NASCAR. He's worked on cars the last 20 years. He's written books on it. He teaches other people how to work on cars. He's my mechanic. At that point, I don't really have to ask a whole lot of questions. And that's exactly what you did. And that's what you want to look for in a syndication is track record. It doesn't have to be the main person's track record, but somebody on that team should have experience, should have done this before, and should know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, so look for that when you're going to invest in a team. Look at the team. Also, look at them. I mean, look at what they're doing. Does it align with what you want? I mean, like when we did our fund, we specifically said we do not want to be controlled by a promise to investors. So, like, I know a lot of syndications like say we want to be in and out in 4 years. But I said, you know what? I don't care. I want a cash flow fund because I care about the cash flow. So if it takes 6 years to sell and get the money back or 9 years, so be it. We're going to do whatever the market is best. And so like you need to look in a line. Does this align with what your goals are? If you need quick in and out, don't go into a fund like mine where we might be in for 10 years. But if you want to be in for 10 years, don't go with the guy who's going to get your money back in 2 years. So make sure that the goal of the syndication or of the fund aligns with your goals, what you want to accomplish. Same with like there's cash flow. There's funds and syndications that work more for cash flow. There's ones that work more for appreciation. I'm in a couple of deals right now on syndication deals where like we get very little cash flow, but it is mostly based on that apartment complex getting sold for way higher later. It's almost like a flip. So the cash flow, I mean, we're not losing money, but there's not a lot of cash flow now. And I knew that going into it because that's the type of investment that it was. So just make sure you understand what you're getting into when you're going to go into a syndication. And we actually have a book on that. I won't talk too much about it now, but we have a book coming out soon at Bigger Pockets on that topic of how do you evaluate on other people's syndications. So check it out. You heard it here first. It's coming out sometime in the next year.
Beautiful. Well said, all right. PT.
Take a second and imagine this. Immediate cash flow, above average rent, built-in equity, and a foolproof exit plan. No, it's not 2012 again. This is just what it's like to invest with Integra Development Group. They've simplified the real estate investing process so everyone can invest. With their new construction single-family rent-to-own homes, you'll get aggressively priced, brand-new properties that have tenants in place now in one of the fastest-growing states in America, Florida. Here's how IDG's rent-to-own strategy works. You get exclusive access to inventory with aggressive pricing thanks to IDG's builder-partner relationships. Then, invest and collect immediate cash flow with tenants already in place at or very close to closing. With the demand for new builds, your tenants pay above-market rent, so you rake in more cash flow. And you'll get built-in equity and appreciation with an already agreed-to purchase price at year 3, helping the tenants become homeowners while you build wealth. That's investing simplified. So secure your next investment property today with Integra Development Group at IntegraDG.com. That's IntegraDG.com to start investing today.
Top real estate investors love to talk about how they save so much on taxes. But how are they able to build rental property empires while skirting Uncle Sam? 1031 exchanges. 1031 exchanges allow you to defer capital gains taxes while you sell an investment property, exchanging your old property for a bigger, better one and avoiding the tax man while you do it. And that's where First American Exchange Company comes in. They're the leaders in 1031 exchanges. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, First American Exchange can help you with simple rental property exchanges, complex commercial real estate investments, reverse exchanges, and more. Don't let your taxes eat into your profits. Visit First American Exchange Company at firstexchange.com or call them at 800-556-2520. That's firstexchange.com or 800-556-2520. Keep your money in your pocket and propel your portfolio further at firstexchange.com. First American Exchange Company does not provide tax or legal advice. Consult your financial, real estate, tax, or legal advisor about your circumstances. First American Exchange Company. Safe, smart, secure.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
Okay, let's move on to the fun stuff. Let's get into the accelerants.
All right, so let's get into the accelerants. So these are things that can help improve any of those six strategies that make these things happen. It's like pouring fuel on a fire. True story. One time, David, I don't know if I've ever told you the story. So I had a fire at my house. Like I was in high school and I had this bonfire, you know, we do that all the time. And it went out. And so I was like, bummer, it went out. So of course, what I do, I grab the can of gasoline and I just start pouring it all over the fire that had gone out. Of course, we all know that the fire didn't really go out. Just, you know, there were coals down there. Like it literally just blew up huge in front of me. And then I look down and I'm holding this gas tank that is burning. Like the actual gas canister is just on fire. And I was like, and I just, as hard as I could, chucked it into the woods, which is probably also not a good idea to chuck in the woods. Luckily, it went out in the air. But see, what I did is I was pouring accelerant on a fire. That's exactly what we're going to talk about here today. Do you like that? That's
a good analogy, gosh. Right? If that doesn't describe how you live your life, man, I don't know what does. Praise the Lord that you didn't just start a forest fire.
Just burned down the whole neighborhood. Yeah. Sorry, guys. It was an accelerant. All right. So we're going to pour some fire on this right now to make your investments produce more revenue, higher returns, and have a lot more fun doing it. So first one, what do you got, David?
OPM. Learn those three words. This is other people's money. Now, it doesn't have to be a friend or family member, though it can be. There's lots of OPM. You've got seller financing. You've got partnerships with other people. You've got private money. You've got hard money. You can do the syndication we talked about. There's lines of credit. The point is, when you get really good at doing deals, what will naturally limit you will be, ooh, this is good. Like there's only so much gas. It doesn't matter how good you are at building a fire. If you run out of gasoline, you can only go so far. So what if other people bring your gasoline?
Yeah, other people are bringing gas tanks over to your house. You can pour
it
on the fire.
Exactly right. And you just focus on keeping that fire going or building new fires and you let other people come and put the fuel in them. That's what you want to do. Now, it's dangerous if you start having people bring you gas before you know how to build a fire. They're going to lose their gasoline. You're not going to make anything come from it. So you do want to have an idea what you're doing before you really ramp this up. But once you've got an idea how to make money in real estate, having other people bring your gas can really ramp things up.
Yeah. Well, so true story. So remember earlier I said we're doing a couple of flips right now. One we're going to make, you know, probably 60K if it goes well. One we're going to make over right around 100K. So I'm doing that with a partner. So I brought in a guy, I've mentioned this on the show before, but a guy named Greg. So Greg came to me and we decided to work together. Greg is doing these deals for no money down. Other people's money. Whose money is he using? He's using a little bit of my money and the hard money lender's money. So Greg is the one that's hustling. He's out there. I mean, every day he's at the auctions. He's out there checking contract, talking to contractors. He's out there doing all the work because what Greg has is hustle and time. What I don't have is time right now. I'm just too busy with a million things, like trying to buy 1300 mobile home units. And so like, but so it worked out perfect for me. So in other words, when people say you can't do deals from no money down, like look at Greg. He's going to make like, you know, he's getting 50% of the profit. If we make 30 on that one and 50 on the other, I mean, he'll make 30 and 50. That's 80 grand in like 3 months off of no money down. And we wholesaled the deal actually last week for like 16K. He made eight on that one. No money down. So again, don't believe that you can't do it. It can pour a lot of gasoline on your fire. So learn the art of that. And in fact, it would be really great if somebody wrote a book on like how to invest in real estate with no and low money down. That'd be awesome. Someday. Yeah,
but I mean, if only life worked out that
way. All right. BiggerPockets.com/no money. Let's go to the second one here. The idea of value add. You added that one to our list here, David. What do you mean by value add and why is that an accelerant?
So as a real estate, oh, by the way, I just passed my real estate broker's license. So now I'm no longer just an agent. I'm actually a broker.
Look at you, fancy.
And one of the fancy things they teach us is this concept of highest and best use. And it's the way of looking at a property and saying, what is the very best way that this could be used to maximize its value, which is usually involving some kind of money. Yeah. So it's a good way to train your brain to look at situations. A coach does this with a player. This person's really talented. How do I maximize the talent they have for what our team can do? A business owner or a manager does this with an employee. A parent does with their kids, if they're a good parent. With property, we want to look at what can I do to add value to a property. Now, if you're flipping houses, you want to make it worth as much as it can be. If you're renting properties, you probably want to make it a combination of making it worth more with increasing the rent. If it's a multifamily property, it's what can I do to increase my NOI? But the principle remains the same. So what I like to do anytime I'm looking at a property is say, what would be the highest and best use of this deal? So in the flip example I gave earlier, we're going to look at the end when it's fixed up, would it be better to sell it and get this much money and have this much of a return on our money? Or would it be better to keep it, rent it out, and split the cash flow between me and my partner? It's very simple. We just look at both options and we say the one that makes the most sense. But if we add a ton of value on both ends, we have options. And again, options are what are actually going to build you wealth. So yeah, buying properties under market value and fixing them up through the rehab forces equity. It forces a property to be worth more. Buying properties that are like a split level and taking the basement and finishing it so you can rent it out, it yep, forces value. It creates value where there wasn't anything there. Raising the rents when you buy a multifamily property, it forces the value to go up. Reducing the expenses, same idea. You always want to be looking at, okay, I got a great deal. I'm under market value. I'm going to cash flow. I'm going to buy it. That's good. Don't stop there. What can I do to put icing on the cake? What can I do to make it even better for myself? What can I do to give myself more options? That's what we mean by value add.
That's good. Yeah, it's good. One thing we're doing for value add right now, like in my business, I mean, besides flipping is kind of a value add, but one thing we're doing is with the mobile home park thing is we're deliberately looking for mobile home parks that have vacancy, like between 10 and 30% vacant. Why? Because then we can force equity, force value by bringing in homes. So we bring in trailers, like rent them out or sell them. And now we just forced equity. And so that's one thing I like about forced equity in today's market is because you don't have to rely on the market going up. You rely on your own ability to make the value of the property go up. So yeah, value add, very, very powerful in today's world.
And that's what one of the things that I help my clients with. They come to me and they say, hey, David, I want a house hack or I want to buy a rental property. And it's hard right now. There's not a lot of them. So that's what we do is we sit down and say, hey, we're going to find you properties that have an upstairs unit and a downstairs unit. We can easily split them in half and rent them out as two separate units. Like very similar to what you did when you bought your Hawaii property. And that's kind of the way you got to look at it. It's not going to be easy. They're not fish in a barrel right now, but that doesn't mean that you can't catch fish. And so look for ways that you can add value to make a deal in today's market. Very good point.
Speaking of fish, you know, some people catch the fish, David. Some people clean the fish, to use your analogy. And what we're talking about is some people are good at certain things. And so you really got to leverage other people, which is our third accelerant today, is what leveraging others. Wasn't that amazing?
Expertly done, Brandon. Thank you. This is why you're the host and the co-host.
It's like I've podcasted before. What do you mean by leveraging others?
Yeah, so leveraging is a cool word, but it basically means using other people's stuff for your own benefit, right? And that's where you want to be in life. Like I have theoretically everything Brandon and I have talked about is a business if you look at it like a business. And there is a place you can get to where you're doing nothing. You just put all the pieces in place that needed to be put there, and they're doing all the jobs that are involved in your business. And then you hire someone else to manage those people. So if a piece falls out, that person has to go find it. right? Yep. Like there's a way that you can insulate yourself from having to do a lot of work. Now, borrowing other people's money is a form of leverage. Yep. Using a construction crew to rehab your property is a form of leverage. Financing it with the bank, using a property manager. These are all forms of leverage, which we accept all the time.
And well, don't think of it as a bad thing either, right? Like I'm leveraging Greg, my partner on the flipping, because he's got all this time and the hustle. So I'm using Greg. He's using me because I have the money and the connections with the and the resources to pull off the financing and to kind of organize this. So we're using each other. Right. It's not a bad thing. It's a great thing.
No, it's actually, if you're leveraging a rehab crew, you're putting food on somebody else's table for their family, right? Like you're literally a lead for that person. They're looking for you to get business from you. They want to be leveraged by you. Like as a real estate agent, you're leveraging me to do a lot of the work for you and represent you on a deal. I have knowledge and experience that you don't have. I'm using all of those things to help you accomplish what you want. That's what I want. I'm spending all my time looking for people like you saying, please leverage me. Well, I do the same thing with my business. And the four people that I leverage the most are the people I talked about in long distance real estate investing, your core four, your lender, your property manager, your contractor, and your deal finder. And you should be using those people for as much as you possibly can. You and I get asked questions all the time. Should I open an LLC or should I buy it in my own name? That's really something that should be leveraged onto a CPA. How do I find a deal? That's something that you should leverage onto a deal finder. What's something else? How do I know if this market's a good market or not? You should be asking your property manager. You should be asking other investors. You should be asking people that know it. They're all there to help you build wealth, and that's how they make money themselves. So use them to do a lot of the work that most of us try to do ourselves.
Very good. Very good.
Who are some of the people you leverage the most in your business?
I mean, there's obviously Ryan Murdoch, who was on the show recently. I think that show came out already when this one airs. Ryan Murdoch, he helps run a lot of my business. Again, I'm Brian Murray, like I said, Walker Meadows and Mike Williams. Like that's kind of my team. And then Greg, like who's helping, you know, doing the flipping side of things. So like everyone has a role of something that they're really good at that we're, you know, but also things like I got a property manager on different properties. My mother-in-law helps manage some properties of ours. I mean, there's like people all over. I mean, you,
you leverage me.
How I leverage you to have a good show. Otherwise the show would be horrible.
I like that. Very well done. Let me ask you two questions about your team. Could you do what you're doing and make the money you're making without those people?
Yeah, not at all.
Okay. Now, a lot of people stop and say you're taking advantage of them. Now, let me ask the next question. Could those people make the money they're making and do what they're doing without you?
I don't think so. But you're
providing gasoline for Brian, right?
Yes. Yeah. Because
he can do more with you. Right?
My skill is being able to raise money. So like I can talk about money and I can raise money from accredited investors where Brian, his skill is like managing and building, you know, this machine.
Maybe Brian is the guy that he can help build the fire in that way. And you're actually bringing gasoline to him. In other situations, you build the fire and people bring the gasoline to you. It's all beautiful when we're all doing our part and we're all making it work. So don't look at leverage like it's a bad thing. That's the point I'm trying to make. In the best relationships, you focus on what you're good at and you let them focus on what they're good at and you have kind of a harmony.
All right. Next accelerant. Let's talk about the funnel real quick. And we talk about this a lot, so I don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but I always say everything's a funnel. And so especially in your business, like, are you tracking how many leads you're getting in and how you're getting them? I mean, are you tracking how many offers you're making? Are you tracking how many deals you're analyzing? If not, start doing that. Start tracking what you're doing. I mean, it's if things you track tends to get better. So anytime, here's the point I'm trying to make. Anytime a newbie comes to me and says, I can't find any deals, I always ask them the same three questions. How many offers did you make last week? How many deals did you analyze? And then how many leads came across your desk? And the answer 100% of the time is somewhere. One of those is I don't have any. Like one of those three, I don't have any. Well, why not? It's really that simple. Like you didn't make any offers. Well, why not? Well, I didn't have any properties to make an offer on. Okay. Well, why not? Did you analyze them? Well, no, I didn't really analyze any deals. Okay. Well, why not? Well, I didn't have any leads. Okay. So we know where the problem is at. It's leads. Why not? What are you going to do for leads this week? Like it just work, know your funnel, work your funnel, and that will diagnose where your problem is so you can go and fix it.
There you go. That's beautiful. And if you get to the point where you realize where you have to fix your problem and you're not fixing it, you have a mindset problem. Shift your focus off of the, you know, what word would we use for that? You know, the logistics of it and get it into your mindset to figure out why you're not taking action.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. Yeah. The mindset thing is important because a lot of us know what we need to do. In fact, Josh Dorkin, his keynote speech at the BPCon this year was called like, you know what you need to do, or you know what to do. And his idea was, his point was basically like, we all know deep down what it is we should probably should be doing. Like we know we need to do direct mail marketing, or we know we need to go to that local meetup. We just oftentimes don't do it. We don't trust ourselves, or we listen to other people's advice. We know what we need to do. So go out there and like, do it. And if you're not doing it, it's a mindset thing. Get yourself a performance coach or something, like someone you can talk with, or a therapist, or a mastermind group, or a journal, like, and start taking some intentional planning around what those steps are and why you're not accomplishing them.
Yeah. This is why Brandon and I talk about it a lot, because people come to us and they say, hey, I'm stuck. I have people reach out to me all the time and say, David, I have this problem. I'm stuck. What do I do? And it's usually not a logistical answer. It's not a, oh, you need to call this person, or you need to change this about your rehab. It's almost always a mindset thing. So don't take that for granted. That's why we bring people on the show to talk about mindset, or authors of books that help with that fact, because that's such a huge component of being successful.
Yeah. It's so true. All right. Next, what do you want to talk about? Another accelerant.
Let's get into partnerships.
All right. I like it. That's a good one.
So a partner is a form of leverage. We kind of already talked about this, but I want to dive specifically into three things that you can look for in a partner, or three different ways to partner. The first would be a personality. You want somebody who's an opposite personality of you. The next would be a skill set. You want someone who has a complementary skill set to yours. You don't necessarily want the same thing. And the third would be resources. Somebody who has resources that are different than yours. Brandon, can you pick one of those and comment on how you've seen that work in either your life or people you know?
Well, we were joking about before this call, where Ryan is like, you know, if you look at the DISC profile, there's DISC, and I typically means like you want to be liked. You want people to like you. You're super personable. So I'm a very high I. Ryan is like a negative I. Like he's like the exact opposite. So like yesterday we had like this guy over at my house looking at my air conditioning unit, which Ryan was hanging around with me. Like we were talking to the air conditioning guy, and I'm like, you know, the thing is not working right. It's not cooling my house the way it's supposed to. So I'm just like, oh, okay, well, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure why it's doing it. And he's just like, you guys told us to install this system. It's not working. Why not? Like he's very direct, because he doesn't have the high eye disorder that I have. Right. So we have a opposite personality in that way. And it works really, really well, because sometimes you need to be a nice guy and you need to have everyone like you. And so you can do things like raise money or do a podcast or whatever. But other times you need to yell at a contractor. And so by having people around you, like in a partnership that have that complementary skill set and personalities, it's helped me tremendously.
How about you? I think you and I probably have a similar thing going on.
Yeah.
Right. Like you've had times where you're dealing with a contractor and you're like, this guy's frustrating. I'm like, give me the phone.
Yeah.
That's
not
going to be frustrating for me. Right.
And yeah, you're kind of like times, Ryan in that way. You just say, I don't care if people like me. I'm going to get
very much.
Yeah.
But that doesn't always work good, right? There's times I need you to look at an email I'm going to send to be like, can you reword this for me so it doesn't blast them in the face like I think it's going to? And in that way, we really help each other. And the podcast, I hear all the time, you and I have a really good chemistry. We play different roles. You play a function in the podcast of keeping it moving smoothly, transitioning very easily from one thing to the next, keeping it lighthearted. And I do a little bit more where I can kind of come in like a jackhammer and get to the bottom and pull out a point. Yep. It makes the show way better. This is an example of what you want in a partnership. And we're saying this because we don't want people to just go find a partner that they like and say, this is my friend, we're going to do it together. That's an emotional insecurity that you're trying to fix. And notice that was not one of the three things that we said you should look for in a partner.
Yeah. Agreed.
So number two would be skill sets. You want a person with a different skill set than you. And I think a good example of this would be Brandon and Brian, like what you were just saying earlier about Brian Murray. He has an analyzer's brain. He has an operator's brain. He can manage an asset really well. He's done it for a long time. He sees potential problems that are going to come up and has a solution for them. This is a guy that can keep a car on the road. He can manage the fine turns that have to happen, and he can keep something under control. You are a blast of NOS that makes a car go fast. That's who Brandon Turner is. If you're around him, this is exactly what he does. So your role in that relationship is to make the thing go quickly. You're the accelerant. Brian's job is to keep it on the rails. And this is when you told me he was your partner, it was like a blessing from God, because I realized that's exactly what Brandon needs. Brandon needs a person that can step in and say, no, we're not going to do it. Or if we're going to do it, we do it this way. And then you figure out a way to make it happen, because that's what your skill is. That's a perfect partnership from a skill set perspective.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, the skill set thing is vital. That book Traction talks about having the integrator and the integrator and the visionary. Because they're two different skill sets. Yeah. Like somebody's the guy with the vision, with the idea of let's go here and the ideas and somebody else has to make it work. And the two people are hardly ever the same. So yeah, two different skill sets entirely.
Beautiful. Okay. Resources. And the third one would be resources, right? And we kind of touched on this earlier when we talked about somebody has the money, someone has the time, someone has the experience. Maybe somebody has the deals. A good example of this would be my flip partner, Mario and I. So Mario, he grew up with his dad as a contractor. He knew construction inside and out. He's really good at looking at a property and figuring out how to make it look perfect and really nice for a cheap amount of money. He has good labor. He has a really tight rehab crew. I am not that guy. I don't have those resources and I don't necessarily want them. I'm really good with numbers and I'm really good with pushing things through. So I can get the deal, put it under contract. I negotiate really well. I can know what we're going to make on it. I can say yes or no, depending on how the numbers are going to work. And he hates that. He just wants to be out there like getting sawdust all over the place.
That's
right?
Awesome. Yeah.
So we have a really good mix of resources where I provide something that he can't find, which is usually the financing and the overall plan. And Mario provides us stuff that I'm not always going to have. He's really good with relationships. He knows people that bring us deals all the time. And then he rehabs it. So when I work with him and I do a deal, even though I'm only getting 50%, it's so easy. I love it. I've never, ever complained about a deal that I did with him. I probably never will, which makes me want to do it more. So that's an example of when you're picking a partner, find someone who has resources that you don't have.
Yeah, that's really good. Really good. All right. Well, we got to get this show kind of wrapped up, but before we do, we're going to ask a few more questions here at the end, but I wanted to take a second and find out what's going on this week over on the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast.
Hey there, Brandon and podcast listeners. This is Jay Scott, your host of the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast. This week on the Business Podcast, we have the founders of an app company called Fetch Rewards. After winning a business plan competition in college, they took their winnings and started a company that is now grossing over $20 million per year and has raised over $50 million in investment. They tell us how they did it, and they provide us a ton of great tips for how you can get your venture off the ground as well. So tune in Tuesday on the Bigger Pockets Business Podcast and check it out.
All righty. Thank you, Jay Scott, about giving us an update on what's going on with your show. I got a couple questions here. Not the famous four, though, because you and I have answered those questions many a times. I want to throw a couple other questions. We're going to call this the sub-famous four. David, what is something that you enjoy doing that you never get tired of?
I like hanging out with you and having in-depth, meaningful conversations about stuff that actually matters. So pretty much every time I leave hanging out with you, I feel lighter, I feel better, and I have a new plan for where I want things to go. And I don't know that there's ever been a time that I've been around you and I was like, God, I'm just sick of this dude.
Yeah.
It never really happens.
Thanks. Well, I enjoy those as well. Thanks. All right. What do you got for me? Random question.
What is something about yourself that you would change if you could and not have to tell anybody about it?
Wow, we're going deep. Wow. What is something about myself I would change? You know, I wish I naturally was motivated and not like set myself up for games to get it all done, if that makes sense. Like I journal and I have to like remind myself to like do things like take my wife on a date, and I have to make sure it's in my calendar to do like family time. Like I wish I like just naturally was good at balancing, but I'm not.
Is that why you're so disciplined about that stuff?
Probably, because that's how I'd be a nightmare without it.
Let me give you some encouragement. I've noticed that the things that people teach the best are the things that they struggled with the most to be good at. And the people who are naturally talented usually make the worst coaches. So even though you probably wish that you were better at being naturally motivated, all the rest of us benefit from stuff like the 90-day intention journal and everything you teach because that's tough for you.
Well, thanks. Do you want to know another interesting thing? I think it was you and I talking about this. Maybe it was me and someone else at the BP Con. Do you know the area of my life? I mean, this is getting deep and personal here, but the area of my life that my entire life, I have struggled more than anything else with self-esteem has been my voice. Always, my entire life. It's like, I've made fun of as a kid all the time. I had speech therapy. Isn't it ironic that the thing that I am most embarrassed by or I struggled with from a self-esteem standpoint is the thing that I make the most money from in my life and like the most important thing that I do really from a like business standpoint, and that everything else stems from is my greatest weakness. I mean,
I've thought that about you Because when you shared the two things you're insecure about, and you said one was your voice, I remember thinking afterwards, like, how cool is it that that's what was used to help everybody? Because if you didn't have a voice, you know, I wouldn't be here. A lot of people wouldn't be here. So isn't that a great example of like how having the intestinal fortitude to move forward in spite of being insecure or worried can lead to huge blessings in your life?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, if I would have, like, and this goes to anybody, whatever you're insecure about, if you just like, if you hold on to that insecurity forever and just say like, no, this is what, like, this is who I am. I'm insecure. So therefore I'm not going to do that thing, or I'm not going to put myself on a limb because of that insecurity. Like, you never know what could have become of you and how the world could use that. So yeah,
that is deep. Deep.
Anyway. All right. David, how has your real estate journey been different than what you imagined?
I never thought I would be a salesperson ever in a million years. I'm probably the worst at sales. The way you're insecure about your voice, I'm very insecure about my people skills. I was the most shy, conservative, awkward person. If you ask my buddy Kyle Ranke, he got interviewed on the BP Money podcast. I was the best man at his wedding. Everybody thought I looked like I worked in the Secret Service. I just didn't know how to, I don't know how to make small talk. I was horrible, horrible at it, right? I just wanted to get right to the point with everything, no frills. It was very, I think like being my friend was like rubbing sandpaper on your face. I honestly think that for like the people that are in my life, they would probably tell you the same thing. And to have to move into a position where you have to be charismatic and engaging and funny and encouraging and all these skills that I never valued, as I didn't expect I'd ever be helping other people build wealth through being a real estate broker and having a team. And now I have a mortgage company. That was a big shock. I never thought I'd be a personality that had to teach what I was doing to other people at this scale ever. I'm a very private person. I don't like to share stuff. I do it because like you do, we recognize that it's good for other people and it's like good for us to step out of that comfort zone. But if you'd have told me 10 years ago, you're going to be like the top producing agent in your area, I would have probably laughed at you.
That's actually very similar to my story with the speech thing. Is like the thing that you thought was like your biggest limitation was actually has proven to be like one of your greatest assets. So cool.
Thank you. Okay. One more question for you. Let me think about what could we give that would be really, really good. If you could have any gift in the world, if you could be good at any one thing, what would it be?
Is this like one of those, like, if you could have one wish, I'd wish for more wishes. Can I wish for more wishes?
Not a wish. Can it's got to be a thing.
Can I be really good at asking for more things to be good at? There we go. So, okay. Question again was what
if you could be really good at anything, what would you pick to be really good at? Playing the guitar, having a six pack, being taller than you are, being shorter than you are. What would you ask for?
I would be good at surfing. Cause I'm not good at surfing, but that is a skill. I think that would be great to be good at.
Is there any studies that have shown that the taller you are, the harder it is to surf?
I don't know.
Like, it's probably gotta be a lot trickier to with your center of balance when you're doing it. I'm thinking of any kind of balancing sport, gymnastics, snowboarding, surfing. Shorter people. Yeah. They're almost always shorter people that do that better.
Well, we're going to say that's why I'm not very good. It's not the fact that
I think you're pretty dope. It's easy to see you when you're out there. I'll tell you that.
Well, thanks.
You're like this super tall and super white tree stands out amongst everybody else out there. If you were drowning, it would be easy to find you.
Here's the truth though. And this is why it's a difficult question to ask is what skill would you, or like, what would you want to be good at? It's because the truth is that all of us can be good at pretty much every skill. Like I'm not a great surfer because I don't surf very much. Like I maybe max once a week. It's been like 3 weeks since I've been out. If I wanted to be an amazing surfer, I could be an amazing surfer. I'm sure. If I want to be, so it's like, the question is like, what would you be good at if you didn't have to try? The answer would be surfing. Yeah. I would love to be great if I didn't have to try.
That's a good point. Well, I mean, there's things maybe like having a really good singing voice that you may not ever be able to
do maybe. Or
something like that. Being really athletic. But for most things, if they're skill-based, you could do it. Improve. But what would you like if you didn't have, if the skill fairy just touched you on the head and was like, here, you are blessed. What would you pick?
Skill fairy. I like it. Speaking of fairies, Rosie yesterday got a package in the mail from her Nana, from her grandma, and opened it up and it was a fairy costume. And so she's not taking it off, I don't think, other than the sleep in the last 24 hours. It's cute.
That's adorable.
Yeah. You'll love it when you see it next time. So, all right. Well, we got to get out of here. So David, anything you want to take us out with any final piece of advice or anything before we get out of here?
Yeah, I think it's really important to end it with what we started, which is understanding real estate is never going to be the same all the time. No business is going to be the same all the time. Yeah. There was a time when emails were a revolutionary concept and you made a ton of money by sending emails, and it's getting to the point that nobody wants to see spammy emails anymore. Same for social media and everything else. You have to adopt a mindset that's okay with change, that embraces change. Usually change doesn't come at a rapid pace, but you got to keep moving. You can't think, well, I just finally learned it, I'm done. You always have to be looking for new things. And to today's market, it's really hard to find a contractor. It's really hard to find a deal. It's very easy to find money. It's very easy to find creative ways to do it. There's a ton of information, like Brandon and I out here. It's better and it's worse in many ways than it ever was before. And 10 years down the road, it will be better and it will be worse in different ways than it ever was before. So look for ways to maximize the benefits. Look for ways to minimize the struggles and the hurdles, and you'll continue to build wealth.
That is amazing. Well, Mr. David Green, where can people find out more about you and connect with you at?
Best way to get a hold of me is on my Instagram, DavidGreen24. If you guys want any advice for, like, if you live in the Bay Area, especially, I put meetups up out here. We just did one the other day. I'd love to be able to meet more people in person. That's really fun. Email is tough for me to get to. My phone is really tough for me to get to, but I really try hard to reply to everybody on Instagram. How about you, Brandon?
Yeah, I actually am not very good at responding to Instagram direct messages anymore because I just get too many of them. You can try, but follow me on Instagram if you want to follow my life, and I post a lot of stuff there. And if you want to know more about my investment stuff, like raising money, the funds, if you're an accredited investor, ODC, like Open Door Capital, odcfund.com. All right, well, thank you, David Green, for being this duet with me today. Hopefully people got a lot out of this. If it is, share it with somebody you know, post it on your Facebook page, comment below in the comment section of the actual show notes, which is at biggerpockets.com/show358. And you can check out other links there. And I think even the transcription, I think, should be there. And that's about all I got. So why don't you take us out of here, David Green?
Sounds great. Thank you very much. This is David Green for Brandon, the ghostly white tree surfing on the place.
I knew you were going to do that.
Signing up.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.